Let's kick off this hour by talking a little Boston sports as we are joined on the Tiller and Rye telephone line by Dave D'Onofrio of the Union Leader. Dave, good afternoon.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, Red Sox season behind us, third last place finish in 4 years, but let's put a positive spin on this and talk about the things that went well for this team, particularly down the stretch.
Yeah, and there was a lot to like there. Pretty much, you know, we'll call it a coincidence, but since John Farrell gave the dugout over to Torey Lovello under some obviously very unfortunate circumstances, the team played a lot better, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what sort of momentum that carries into next season. I'm not sure that necessarily applies, but if you look at it from the perspective of the young players, certainly there's a lot of guys who should be going into this offseason and theoretically into next season with a lot of confidence. And you could really build around some of those guys. Or if you want to take it another way, you could trade some of those guys. So the season is over, but as far as interest in the Red Sox, I think it's only just beginning.
Yeah, and a couple of key positions. Obviously, the starting rotation is a high priority, but not everybody seems convinced that Dave Dombrowski will go out and either make a deal or spend the money to get an absolute guaranteed number one ace kind of guy. Which direction do you think they'll go?
It's interesting because if you look around the American League and specifically at the playoff teams, it doesn't necessarily indicate that you need a true number one, or even that, you know, we've heard a lot in recent years about how you need power arms and you need pitchers who can get strikeouts. None of these playoff teams were particularly good in that area. And if you just look at the starters, you know, the Yankees were 10th in starter ERA, the Royals were 12th, and I think Texas was 11th. So that's two division winners right there. And if you go even further and look at individual personnel, none of these teams, except for David Price, really gives you a clear-cut number one shutdown guy to go into the postseason with. So teams have done it both ways. As recently as this season, though, you did not need an ace to win in the American League. And if that guy's not out there, I think the lesson that teaches you is to not force it. Don't pay a guy just to pay a guy. If you can get Price at a price you're okay with, do it. If you can get Cueto at a discounted rate based on what he did after getting Kansas City, you probably do that. But you don't go out there and spend money just for the sake of saying you acquired an ace, because that's not going to work.
Well, and after the way they started this season, this rotation pulled it together. I think I read today that in the second half of the year they had, I believe, the second best earned run average in all of baseball. Who out of this group do you think ought to be a definite parts of the rotation next season?
That's tricky. I would say Clay Buchholz, because his option is affordable based on the market. You can get a guy like that for $13 million. And even if he gives you only what he gave you this year, if you look at the rate at which teams pay for victories, he was worth it. So I would pencil him in. Beyond that, I'm not sure, because I think you do need to go out and make some sort of upgrade. I'm not saying you need a number one, as we just talked about, but you probably need to add something there, which means you need to create a spot. And if you're going to try and be aggressive with your holes, if you're going to try and add a big bat at first base, if you're going to try and add a number one starter by a trade and not by a free agency, you're going to have to give something to get something. And that's where a guy like Eduardo Rodriguez probably enters the equation, where a guy like Henry Owens, based on what he did over the last month, becomes, you know, a trade candidate. I'm not willing to say any of these five guys will be back. I think if you're not going to change anything, I'd say the two young lefties, Buchholz, Miley eats innings, and then Porcello, based on his contract, you need to give him another chance. And I think based on what he did after coming off the DL, he probably deserves it.
Now, catcher's an interesting situation, too. Vasquez coming back from the injury. Blake Swihart had what I think everybody would acknowledge was a better-than-expected year overall, and you have the luxury, but can you afford to have that luxury of keeping two pretty good catchers?
You also owe Ryan Hannigan $3.75 million, which, again, if we're looking at this from a perspective of where can they make moves and who can they give up to get things done, Hannigan's a guy that could give you some value in return. Also gives you the flexibility to trade one of those other two young players. Swihart, to me, is the keeper of the group. I would not move him. I would like to see some more power. He had that two home run game in Yankee Stadium, but other than that, not a ton of pop in his bat, and also not a great defensive season for him. Vasquez is a superior defender. I'd be okay if they went into the season with Swihart and Vasquez. Something tells me that they will try and get something for one of those guys, keep Hannigan around as the veteran backup, and try and move on that direction.
Dave, how desperate are they to get rid of Hanley Ramirez?
I think that's among the top priorities. If you look at what they did, what the numbers show you at the end of the year, is that the team Ben Cherington foresaw was not all that far off from what they actually got. If they had gotten more production out of left field, if they'd gotten more production out of third base, they already finished fourth in the league in runs. The pitching staff finished 14th in ERA. Not good, obviously, but I don't think they were ever expected to be that good. You got to look at it and say, if they finish first in runs, maybe that gives you five or six more wins. That at least puts you in contention into the final week. Maybe things are a little bit different at the trade deadline. Maybe things are different throughout the season. I pin this season on those two guys in particular, Sandoval and Ramirez. And I think if they're dissatisfied with the work Ramirez has done with his body, with his glove, with the lack of position, they're going to make a very strong effort to get rid of him and his contract. The question is, given that he can't play anywhere in the field and that limits you to the American League, and given that you owe him about $66 million, there's a very limited number of teams who can take that on or who would want to take that on. So I think they'll try. I'm just not sure that they'll succeed.
Dave D'Onofrio, the union leader, with us here on Downtown. Let's talk Patriots. They get ready for Game 4 this week down at Dallas. And if you believe in some sort of Patriot karma, not only the Patriots succeeding, but bad things happening to many of the people that wronged them from their perspective. And now you look around the league, and I have to wonder, who can beat this Patriots team?
There's a lot of bad teams, a lot of bad coaches, a lot of bad quarterbacks, and there's a lot of injuries. All that adds up so far to having the look of a very, very successful season for the Patriots. But the thing that you always have to keep in the back of your head is this Dallas game looked a lot tougher before Dez Bryant and Tony Romo went down. Mm. And if you think about it from Patriots' perspective, yes, that makes this Sunday easier, but it also kind of has to put in your mind, what do they look like without Tom Brady and or Rob Gronkowski? If any of those guys misses, any of their key offensive guys misses 3-4 weeks at a minimum, I think we're going to feel a lot differently. And that's sort of playing out throughout the league. Is there's so much parity. These bad decisions are costing teams games. The Patriots hopefully don't have to deal with that, given that they have Belichick and that they have a veteran like Brady on the field right now. There's so much going on, so many injuries to guys that are crucial to their teams. I almost caution Patriots fans to not get too comfortable with the idea that you're going to be full strength all season.
Well, when you mentioned the bad coaching and obviously some bad decisions by a lot of teams, and so we make fun of Bill Belichick and the Patriots way and that organization, but does that organizational stability that they have and the ability really to have one guy making a lot of the key decisions help them at a time when a lot of other franchises seem to be struggling with figuring out who is the boss?
Without a doubt. And I think that stability is the biggest thing they have going for them at this point. They come into the offseason not needing to set a culture, not needing to make decisions. They just keep going on the track that they're going, and everybody knows what that track is and where it leads. If you just look around the AFC East, there's been talent on these three other teams. There's just always resetting, always restarting. They can't find a quarterback. They can't find a coach. Those are the two most important things. And when the Patriots have the structure they have and the guys they have in those spots, it's just such an advantage, and it plays out year after year after year. And now when you look at what's going on across the league now, I think it's a reflection on the changes to training camp. Can't have two practices in a day anymore. Teams are clearly coming out slower and not as well prepared for the start of the season. Maybe this changes over the coming months, but for right now, Patriots appear to be playing at a different level than everyone else.
It's still pretty early in the season, and again, injuries can change things at a moment's notice. But from your perspective, who's the biggest obstacle in the AFC to them getting back to the Super Bowl?
I think it's Denver, because if Denver defensively can shut the Patriots down, I think the offense is still good enough to score points. Manning is not what he was. His diminished arm strength sort of limits the weapon that Demaryius Thomas can be, as well as Emmanuel Sanders. But still, you look at those guys, they're scoring enough to win each week. If they get any semblance of a running game, which I think is what they hope to accomplish with Ronnie Hillman and C.J. Anderson, they can be good enough offensively. And when you have those two guys in Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware coming off the edge, we've seen what pressure can do to Brady in the past. They've somehow found a way to mitigate really good defensive lines here in the last couple of years by getting the ball out extremely quickly. But it's always a factor when we think back to those Giants games, what that team was able to do as far as getting in Brady's face. The Ravens did it. The Jets did it. It's always the X factor. If you can get to Brady and rattle him, you can slow the Patriots down. I'm not saying it's easy. The Patriots have even made it harder recently. But I think if there's anyone that can beat the Patriots in their most vulnerable way, it's probably the Broncos.
Dave D'Onofrio covers the Patriots and the Red Sox for the Union Leader. Always great insight. Dave, thanks for visiting with us, and we'll do it again soon.
Excellent. Thanks.
18 minutes after 5 o'clock downtown. Where you